Wintrust Business Lunch Hour time. Glad you're with us. I'm Bob Surratt.
I'm Marianne Murciano. We're happy it's Friday.
Yes, we are. And coming up, social media buzz. We'll get to the business of hashtags, likes, and shares with Scott Kleinberg coming up at about 12:37. Johnny Jett in our business class with some interesting travel-related stories in just a few minutes. And as I mentioned to Bill, we'll talk to a very interesting Chicago businessman about a college basketball development that could influence March Madness for years to come. That's on the way. First up, John Carpenter. He is with the Tribune's Blue Sky Innovation, covering startup ventures. And the University of Chicago got some good news in that department this week, didn't they, John?
Yeah, they did. The business school, has this event every year called the New Venture Challenge. And it's basically a student teams pitch new businesses. But what's been exciting about it lately is some of those businesses have gone on to become Grubhub and Braintree, which just got bought for $800 million, I think, last year. So there's an organization that tries to rate these startup accelerators, which are growing by leaps and bounds. So it's kind of to help startups judge which ones are good. And Booth was ranked fourth among the top 10 in the accelerators in the country. And that's a list that's pretty much dominated by California accelerators. Techstars was also on that list. Techstars has a big presence in Chicago. They're also in several other cities. But, you know, Booth kind of has been doing it for a long time. And since this latest startup boom kind of took off, and Booth has sort of ratcheted up their entrepreneurship program, they've had, you know, when you have successes like Grubhub, it kind of gets a lot of excitement. So it was a nice little shot in the arm for University of Chicago.
Yeah, good for us.
Yeah.
Kickstarter, now they're dabbling in real estate?
It's a Kickstarter-like platform. It's not the actual Kickstarter, but it's crowdfunding. And for those of you who don't know, crowdfunding are these sites like Kickstarter where you can go on and you can see a video for some new product or some movie that people need funding for. And if you like it, you can contribute to it or you can buy the product. What's new is this company called Peer Realty and others like it that are doing equity funding. So it's a little bit sort of ratcheted up. You can go onto this website and invest in a company and you own shares in that company. It was made legal a few years ago by the Jobs Act, and they're still kind of figuring out the rules. I mean, there's a lot of potential, you know. It's available to accredited investors, you know, people who have a lot of money. It's going to be available to anybody. On the one hand, people think that's great, gives people a chance to invest in some of these startups, and in this case, it's in real estate projects. But, you know, there's definitely a few people who are a little bit worried because you can lose a lot of money there. You know, you need to be able to evaluate. You know, you need to have a certain level of sophistication, I think, to evaluate investments.
So this would be a company that invests in real estate? Is that what you're saying?
The Peer Realty is a platform, so that's where you can go to look for these.
So it's like a Kickstarter, like
exactly.
A GoFundMe.
Exactly.
All right, and then?
And you would look, in this case, it's a like a shopping mall. I think it's the River. It's a shopping mall project that somebody's looking for investors. The old school model, they would go around town, go to banks, go to rich people, and say, "Hey, give me some money. It's a good investment." Now they put the information up on this Kickstarter like platform, and people, for I think the minimum investment is $5,000, and you get shares in that project and equity share, so you're a part owner. So, you know,
I mean, and how do you know? I mean, like, how can people get informed so that they're making the right investment decision?
That I think is the $64 question.
Free for all.
Yeah, I think there are definitely going to be rules, and you know, this was made legal in 2012, and the SEC is still writing the rules. And this Peer Realty, it's still only available to accredited investors. So, but there, it will eventually be available to anyone. And that, I think, is the fear. Is that?
Yeah, the fear is, I mean, that the better the marketing plan is for the product or for the property,
right,
the more, in, not necessarily the best investment, but the best.
Right, right. It's one thing to go on Kickstarter and see a cool video for a great new, you know,
ear plug or something.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's $100 or something, or $200. And you look at that and you say, that is cool. I really want to have one of those. And you buy it, basically. And a few months later, that company raises that money through Kickstarter. They set it all up. They make those things and they send it to you. And every once in a while on Kickstarter, some of those projects go bad, but not many. But it is a little bit different. I mean, you can look at a real estate development and think, that looks great. You know, that looks like a great shopping center. But what you really need to look at are the numbers. And you need to look at, you know, a lot of things that I certainly am not qualified to look at. So there's
liens against this company?
Yeah,
I mean, are they getting sued? Are they breaking laws?
I think there'll definitely be some rules that will help take care of some of that stuff. But you still, you know, anybody who's invested in anything more than like buying a stock knows that I think you can pretty quickly get confused. And so, you know, the like I said, for this is accredited investors. So these are people who probably have a little bit more experience in evaluating investments, and or they have people working for them or people that they can turn to evaluate it. But, you know, it's exciting on the one hand. The startup people love it. If you go over to 1871, they love the fact that equity investing is now, you know, at some point, once they figure the rules out, is going to be available. Because to be honest, Kickstarter has really been a boon for small manufacturers and arts groups and people who, you know, you go there, you make your case, and the public, the crowd, you know, throws you a few bucks here and there, and it's really allowed a lot of businesses to get off the ground and get going. So I think there's some pros and cons. It's got great potential. It's also a little bit, you know, can be a little scary.
I would love to at some point, and I don't know if they make these numbers public, but I would love to know people who do advertise their products on Kickstarter, on GoFundMe, on all those sites. What is the success rate? I mean, because I've looked for that, and I've never really seen anything that says truly what it is.
You mean the success rate, like how many projects are successfully funded?
Yeah, funded and then continue on to be, like the great idea actually came to fruition.
I think that would be a great thing to find out. The thing to remember is Kickstarter is really new. Kickstarter's only been around for 3 or 4 years.
Right.
So, but I think that's... that's certainly worth looking at. You know, you definitely hear stories of Kickstarters that were supported that kind of failed and people lost their money. I haven't heard too many of those stories, but they're definitely there. And I think the people at Kickstarter try and, you know, vet it, but it's sort of like Uber. You know, their role is bringing people together. These aren't their companies. So, you know, I met some of those guys down South by Southwest, and they love Chicago. And there's a lot of exciting
projects.
Well,
they should. Yeah. John Carpenter reporting for Blue Sky Innovation, covering the new economy for the Tribune. Thank you, John. Talk to you next week.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Time to check in with our world traveler, Johnny Jett, proprietor of the very comprehensive travel website, the only one you need, johnnyjett.com. Well, let's find out where he is today. Hi, Johnny.
Hi, Johnny.
How you guys doing? I'm in sunny L.A., and that cruise sounds pretty good, by the way.
Hey, why don't you come along?
What's the date again?
It's October.
October 5th, I think it is.
Yeah. It's Regent Seven Seas. They're pretty good.
They are
awesome.
I've
never been on Regent Seven Seas, so although I'm speaking at a conference that week.
Oh, poor Johnny. Where in Rio de Janeiro? Listen,
you know,
Johnny.
There's actually a bunch.
Oh, yeah. I'm reading this article about airline seats this week. I want to ask you about this.
Sure.
It says here, in the past 40 years, the average economy class seat lost roughly 2 inches in width, going from 19 inches to as little as 17 inches. So does that mean a guy like yourself who travels zillions of miles has to go on a diet these days?
Well, you know, it sure feels like it. Every time I get in an airplane seat, especially in economy, you're like, are these seats getting smaller or am I just getting bigger? I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah. Do you pay for an upgrade? Because now, actually, part of the coach cabin, there's more room in some on some airlines. Is that how it works?
For sure. So, you know, most planes have 3 or 4 classes. So they have economy, economy plus, business on some, and then first. So there could be 4 classes on a plane. And actually, Delta's coming out with a 5th class which is kind of like Spirit Airlines. They're going after Spirit Airlines on certain routes because Spirit doesn't, the seats don't recline, and they charge for everything, you know, mm-hmm. your assigned seat, your carry-on bag. You can't even bring a bag on some things. So actually, you can bring a bag, but they charge for carry-on. So they're going after that market. So there could be fifth classes, five classes, but the big thing is, you know, when you travel a lot, you want to get upgraded. And that's, you know, the airlines are kind of like drug dealers. They'll give you a free upgrade once in a while. And once you go up front, man, it's tough to go in the back.
Isn't
you know,
it? Yeah.
And then you'll do everything you can to get up front and spend big money on fares and things like that.
Okay, so Johnny, it's spring break is either in progress right now for many people or it's going to be next week. And some people, like Bob and myself, we don't even have our airline tickets yet. You know, it's 8 days away, so we're going to have to do it today in order to miss that 7-day window. But are there last minute deals to be had? Where can one find last minute deals? Is that possible?
There are last minute deals. You know, it's going to cost you. I mean, spring break is
then it's not
busy.
A deal.
Well, I mean. So, you know, there's a good – Google just came out with a really cool new website. So it's called google.com/flights. So Google actually owns ITA software, which I've talked about many times. They bought it for $2 billion. You can't actually book on there. But now they're really putting all their resources into this google.com/flights. So what you do is put in Chicago, and then they have this really cool map function. So you can see wherever – and put in your dates, put in Chicago and your dates, and you can see where you can go anywhere in the world and what it will cost you. You can zoom in, zoom out. You can zoom into little cities or just keep scrolling around and see. So you can go to Europe. You can go to the Caribbean. You'll find out what will cost you on those particular dates.
All right. We're going to give that a try.
You know, to save money, you know, always try and leave on a Tuesday or a Wednesday or even, you know, sometimes on a Saturday. But, you know, my wife is flying next Wednesday, and we're trying to get her from LA to Toronto, and you know, just to use miles. Usually, you can use your miles on a midweek, but next week, man, everything is triple the price.
No kidding.
But including for miles. So, but the trick is usually the airlines won't open up those seats until a day or two before. But I was just looking today on American, and they did not open anything up for today or tomorrow. So I'm getting a little worried.
Yeah. It is a good time to plan a trip to Europe because of the dollar and the euro. There are some good deals now, aren't there?
Oh, my gosh. There are some great deals. The euro last week was at 105. I'm going to see right now what it is today. But, you know, it was last year it was like a 130-something, mm-hmm. So which was 30% more expensive for us to go to Europe. Now it's pretty much even. So that is... I mean, Europe is going to be huge this year, and actually, American has a dollar fares out right now from L.A. and New York. I didn't check Chicago, but they have dollar fares from those destinations to Copenhagen.
Nice.
And you just have to, but there's taxes, so there's like a $300 in taxes. But still, to be able to fly in the summertime round trip from L.A. or New York for $650 round trip is a bargain.
Yeah, it may pay to go there to get over there. So the hotel rates are affected, of course. Shopping sounds good, but as other than that, deals like the one you just mentioned with the dollar and the euro, does that really affect the airline ticket price very much?
No, I mean, because we're paying it in dollars, so for them it will be more expensive. Mm-hmm. But you know, people are saying that, you know, because the euro is now, you know, just dropping so much that they might raise hotel prices. But if they do, you know, they're really going to they're not going to get the local business, and a lot of their hotels rely on local, you know, people from other partnering countries or local countries. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they're going to raise the hotel prices. So it's just a great time to be going to Europe. And I think with gas prices so low, I mean, everyone's going to be traveling this year. If they're going to be driving around America or flying across the pond to Europe.
JohnnyJet.com for more on everything we talk about, and then some, all kinds of deals and information on airfares and hotels and Johnny's recovery from the shingles. Always good talking to you, and I trust you're healthy now, right?
Yes, I'm feeling much better.
All right, happy travels.
Bye,
Thank
Johnny.
You. You too. Take care, you guys.
Well, Let's get to the business of social media with Tribune So Social columnist Scott Kleinberg.
Hello.
Hi, Scott.
Scott, tell me something about Facebook Messenger. I know it's in the news again today, and I keep seeing these notifications on my iPhone that people are leaving me messages on Facebook, and then I, in the old days, I just get their message, and now I gotta join Messenger or something, right? And every time I hit the thing and then it comes up, I don't know what happens. It's too complicated.
Well, if you think it's complicated now, it sounds like it's going to get that much more complicated.
Uh-oh. What? Now what?
They were talking about it at South by Southwest, and apparently they're going to add the ability for third-party apps to be placed on top of it. And while I kind of know what that means from a technical standpoint, it basically means that people, that third-party app developers will be able to work with it directly. So you'll be able to put a certain app inside of Facebook Messenger. And they haven't said what these apps are going to be yet, but kind of thinking about where the trends are going, I could see something like a live streaming type of thing being part of Messenger. So now it's not enough for you to respond to all those requests that you have. You have to actually, you don't have to, but you could actually talk to people live and just, you know, walk with them and show them Chicago. And
how about the telephone? Use the telephone.
No one does that anymore.
So are you saying that this is just on the Facebook personal or also on the page?
Actually, neither. This is just Facebook Messenger. So this separate app right now that exists that seems to be just for responding to Facebook messages would be just these like the separate whole experience.
So then do you sign up for this? Do you have to have a different login? How do people know to find you?
They don't say that yet. That's a really good question. They don't say that yet. My guess is that it won't be taken too far out of the Facebook ecosystem where you'll still be, it'll be connected to your regular Facebook sign-in. But once you go to this, you'll have all different kinds of things that you can do that you can't possibly think about doing now.
Okay, but so, for example, I have a personal page on Facebook. Yep. We have a Surat and Murciano Facebook page, which has a lot of followers.
Yep.
So those people, you people listening who are our Facebook friends, will be able to contact us in a different way because they already do that.
Well, that's another good question because right now Facebook Messenger is only for personal profiles. You can't use that for branded pages. So whether or not this would be something that you could do for pages for brands, that is another separate question. That would be a
but
great
there
way
be
to
no
come
need,
to talk.
Because if anybody wanted to talk to Bob or me, they are our friends on Facebook, Surat and Murciano. They can, because they can just send us a message
directly,
but it doesn't go through Messenger.
They can just put a comment and ask a question, and we try to answer as many as we can.
Exactly, and I think you'll always be able to do that. I think what this is just this redundant way of being able to reach people, because you can always reach people one way through regular private messaging, but then there's this type of private messaging and, you know, the use of the app. So I think it's just going to be a different experience, and it's going to come down to what people prefer to use. Just because someone leaves you a comment in one way doesn't mean that you might not grow to love Facebook Messenger and want to respond through that way.
Well, why did they change that anyway from the time when you could send somebody a Facebook message and you wouldn't have to do anything to get it, really?
Back then, when they explained it, they said that it was too difficult to keep writing the code on top of the original Facebook app. So their thought is separating it into separate apps makes it easier.
Explain what that
to
means
keep...
because Bob is giving you a very puzzled look. Writing a code.
I don't know if
what,
I want to hear the
about?
Explanation
when,
yeah. to this.
When you're actually writing these programs, these apps, you know, it takes certain amounts of code and that's beyond my level of expertise, but it takes certain amount of code to actually, you know, create it. And if you have an app that's combined together with Facebook, you have to do it all in one giant thing. This way, if you pull it apart, you can have people working on one section while somebody else works on the Facebook app, but they work together back and forth.
Oh, sure.
So
that
to them
explains
it's easier,
it.
Not to you. To them it's easier.
A Facebook executive, I think that's who it is going to work in the White House. What's this all about?
It is actually their engineering director, and he is going to work at the White House in their tech department, in their information technology department. And his job is going to be modernizing the White House's own technology and keeping it efficient and in line with private sector best practices. So I guess the White House is finally realizing that it's 2015 and not 1992, and it's time to update their website. Yes, better late than never, right?
And yesterday, the White House introduced what they termed a publicly available analytics dashboard.
What will that show us? I didn't even know this thing was coming, but it's analytics.usa.gov, and it shows you analytics for some of the most trafficked government websites, so in real time. So you can actually see when people are going to the Department of Defense or going to this particular website, and it shows you how they're getting there. Are they using a mobile device? Are they using a desktop? Are they using Chrome, Firefox, IE? You know, all these different ways of looking at it. I don't know that it's particularly interesting for anybody except, you know, a real data analytics geek kind of person. But if you have it open on a screen and you're watching it and you're watching these numbers go up, it's kind of interesting, you know, from that kind of standpoint to watch.
Yeah, I mean, right. Some, you know, your Mike Flannery's of the world, your Carol Marines, you know, we'll be
looking at that. There's people out there that have time to keep these things open on their screen and look at them. That's how I look at it. So why not?
And they have finally improved the umbrella. Is there a lot of buzz on social media about this?
I saw this yesterday evening, and I thought to myself, this can't really be real, but it is. It's a Bluetooth-powered umbrella. Yeah.
Bluetooth-powered umbrella.
It has a chip in the handle, and basically it says if the umbrella is too far away, it will let you know and basically give you this message like, I hope you're not leaving me behind kind of thing. It's possible that you could put the umbrella in a closet, but the problem is, if you think about it, whether you leave your umbrella on the bus or you lose it in the back of the closet, it's very difficult to find an umbrella. I mean, I don't know how many I've gone through. Yeah. Now, the point of this thing being, it's $125. So if you're going to pluck down $125 for an umbrella, this thing better tell you everything.
Okay, yeah. If I'm going to
at least you won't lose it. At least you won't lose
for an umbrella. Yes. I want it to float over me as
Absolutely.
I'm walking, and I don't want to have to hold it. I just want it to where to cover me.
They call that version 2.0, Mary.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Mary Poppins 2.0.
Yeah, exactly.
Scott Kleinberg, thank you. Have a good weekend.
You too, guys.
Here's a local business you should know about, and you probably don't, but when you talk about March Madness, you got to talk about Fast Model Sports, a Ravenswood business. All but seven of the 68 teams in the NCAA men's basketball tournament this year use this company's top product. And let's talk about it with Ross Comerford, founder and CEO of Fast Model Sports. How you doing, Ross?
I'm doing great, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Let's talk a little bit about what this is. It's kind of like a basketball version of Microsoft Office. Is that accurate?
Yeah, so I would say so. We focus on scouting, game planning, analytics, play diagramming, and practice management. So everything to make our coaches at the Division I and the NBA level more efficient, more productive, which saves them time and helps to translate into creating better preparation for their players and creates better opportunities to win games.
How did you start this, Ross?
I founded the company in 2004 at my parents' kitchen table, kind of one of those stories, with about $5,000. And I was just really interested in sports and technology, and there was an intersection. And I was looking at how teams were charting their own plays and their own lineups and how efficient they were, what was working and what wasn't. And a friend of mine from high school was the starting point guard at Duke, and she got me an introduction to the women's staff there, and I started to build a product, and from there went down to Duke and made a presentation to their staff, both the men's and the women's staff, and they signed up, and kind of it was all history from there. And the last 11 years, we've grown a fantastic business.
So how exactly does it work? Can you run us through that?
Sure. So it's all done in preparation. So if you're scouting an opponent, what one of the coaches will do is they'll watch 5, 6, 7, 8 games on that opponent, and they'll use our software to create a scouting report or a game plan. So that scouting report has all of their own notes, offensive tendencies, defensive tendencies. Our product provides them with stats and analytics, pictures of players. So it really gives them a very easy way to put a scouting report together to present that to the players. And then for the play diagrams, everyone wants a diagram of what the other team's plays are so that they can walk through them so they're very prepared. So for every single game, every single night in the NBA, an NBA player is holding a scouting report. Every single night in college basketball, the college players holding our scouting reports, and it just provides them with information to better understand what the game plan is and to execute better during the game.
That's fascinating. Ross, is the plan to expand? Will other major sports leagues get involved with you?
So right now our business is divided kind of into kind of two pieces. We have a we have an enterprise, which is we focus directly on basketball. So all 30 NBA teams, we have 85% of Division I. And then we have a high school business. We look at the enterprise business pretty much right now being focused on basketball. But our high school business, we have about 7,000 teams there. We're looking in the next few years to expand to different sports.
And when you're talking about the NBA, they have like they have tens of thousands of plays, don't they?
Yeah. So we have a few clients that have upwards of 25,000 to 30,000 plays, and they're all archived. So what really makes it nice is that if you're in a staff meeting and you say, okay, this coach ran this, you know, 4 years ago, it's all database, and they can pull that play up, you know, instantly. There's metadata around it, and it's right in front of them. So it really is time is money and how to create efficiency for coaches.
It's a great idea. Anybody else doing this? Do you have any competition?
Well, there is competition. It's a hyper-competitive market, so there is competition at this level, but much more for budgetary dollars, not for what we do. We've just done such a great job. We've been incredibly innovative. We have incredible market share, wonderful relationships, and we just produce a wonderful product with service that we've been really been able to be fortunate that we've always stayed ahead of the curve.
I may have to hire you for my touch football and softball teams, Ross, so stand by for that. Congratulations, and all the best to you. It's a great business story right in Chicago in Ravenswood. Fast Model Sports, founder and CEO, Ross Comerford.
Thank you, Ross.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you.